Welcome to Campry Education, where every week we take our favorite stories from the internet and force our guests to take a stance. I am your host, Shay, and joining me as always is Stephen McKinley, the tiny man operating the Ian Rowe robot from within. And today's guests, we have the Chief Sustainability Officer for BP from 2009 to 2010, Rachel. And joining us as well is Mitch McConnell's personal trainer, stylist, and college roommate, Emil. Thank you all for joining us. So to jump right in today, very important question. I need you all to weigh in. If an escalator breaks and just becomes stairs, when a car breaks, does it just become a lounge? Discuss.
Yeah. If a car doesn't have an engine, the whole thing that makes a car is the fact that it can go from one place to another. Once you've stripped that feature from it, it's essentially a very expensive love seat.
Nah, I don't know. We're not going around saying, like, look at these fancy stairs. Like, an escalator is an escalator. So if a car doesn't work, then it's like, it's still a car.
It's a car, but it's also a piece of junk. But why a lounge? Why not just like a bench
five seats. That's why it's a lounge. It's five. Oh. It's a cool place for you and four of your best friends to sit and discuss the topics of the day.
I love the idea.
Because you're all facing the same direction.
It's not a great lounge.
Is it just like a...
It's not the best lounge I can imagine, okay? But it's a lounge is my argument. Or it's really my question. And I'll say this did stem from an argument I had with my girlfriend who said, escalators never really break because then you just have stairs. And my response to that was, well, then a car never really breaks because then you just have a lounge.
Well,
an escalator does break because an escalator and stairs are different. Yeah. Are different things. Like the purpose of the escalator is that it is moving stairs.
Thank you.
So if it breaks, it's not an escalator. Right. I mean, it becomes something else. So
you
maybe you're right.
Credit,
a car breaks, it becomes something else. It doesn't become. It's not an escalator anymore.
We've put a lot of faith in an invention that doesn't work more often than it works. Like I feel like I encounter broken escalators a lot more than I encounter working ones. And I feel like maybe that's the fact that it's like a technology holdover from, like, I don't know when it was invented. I imagine, I'm just going to say the 80s. Like, I imagine they started fucking building the shit out of shopping malls and they were like, Americans we can never convince them to get to the second floor walking. What do? So they invented escalators, and they're just holdovers from like the Reagan era. They're just like these like fucking political relics, like present in these like abandoned
places in our society. But let me tell you something. When I lived in Kyrgyzstan, they built a mall in the capital city, and people were coming from all over just to ride the escalator that they put in there. They would just ride it up and then ride it down and then do like, just keep doing it. Like it was some sort of attraction. So to us, all right,
that kind of makes me think of like, you know, if you took somebody from the past, you know, and put them in like an automobile now, like maybe from like the 1920s, you know, like, wow, these cars are going so fast at 60 miles per hour versus like back then it's like 30 mile per hour cars.
They'd I love the idea that someone in Kyrgyzstan is like, these are the fastest stairs I've ever been on.
It was a big deal. Like, they were like freaking out about it. And I thought it was kind of cute, actually, because I was like, yeah, this is a cool thing.
Well, you guys are taking this a little bit further from what I want. I really just wanted on the record a bunch of people to say that I was right in this argument with my girlfriend. Can we all just agree that that stairs and broken escalators are not stairs? No, wait, that's not what I want to say.
Broken escalators are stairs. They're no longer escalators.
Yes, escalators break and they're no longer escalators. They're chairs. Yes. In the same way that if a car breaks, it becomes a shitty lounge. We all agree. All right, moving on.
No.
All right. Well, not to give Shay the benefit of the doubt or the satisfaction of being right, I think we can all agree to disagree and just generally ask him to leave. And we'll start with today's first story, okay? So with Biden addressing the country during his recent State of the Union and saying that it's time for us to get back to work, it's time for us to dust off our resumes and get ready to apply for more jobs that will not require us to go back to work in the office. As true freedom can only be achieved by jumping from one job to another, the way a monkey might swing from branch to branch to escape Elon Musk's deadly brain chips. I don't know where I'm going with this. I just wanted to include that line and now it doesn't fit. All right. Fuck it. We're going to keep going. Listen, as we do, as Americans desperately try to search for jobs that will not require them to go back to the office, there might be some gaps in our resumes as they're requiring certain experience that we might not have. And so with that being said, I got to ask everybody here, is it okay to lie on a job interview?
Yes.
Absolutely.
I guess, wait, I said on a job interview, on a job application, and fuck it, both. In a job interview. Both. Like, okay, so both. It's okay to lie on a resume.
Mine's yes and, yeah.
All right, Shay, what about you?
Yeah, I know you and I had talked about this before. I never have lied on a job interview. I've bragged and I've maybe like exaggerated, but
lying. If you've exaggerated, you've lied.
I don't know.
I take that back.
Semantics, right? Like, oh.
As a base, I don't think it's okay to lie during a job interview because that sets a precedent. But I do think it's okay to lie on your job application.
I say both.
But then aren't they going to ask you about what was... they're going to be like, hey, it says here that like you trained tigers in Malaysia. Like, tell us about that. You're going to be like, look, all right, you guys, I was going to come in here and lie to you. Like, is this how you get points? You're like, I was going to lie to you, but after meeting you, I respect you too much to lie to your face. That's bullshit.
I'm going to use that line, maybe. But
I wouldn't do that.
Okay.
We're gonna table it here because we are going to talk about... I did some research on this, and I did receive some, differing opinions on this, but Bustle weighed in on this, whoever the fuck they are.
Oh, Bustle.
And okay. Bustle, the most
online
reliable...
Online publication.
Yeah. They're all online at this point. Like, let's not kid ourselves.
Right.
Okay.
The famous print-only publication.
Yeah, the famous. Okay. They think there are 7 times it's okay to lie in a job interview. And I'm going to go over them with this now. And stop me if you think that something is, like, too far or not good enough. Okay, so number one is when it's skills you don't have, but you know you can learn. And I agree with this, wholeheartedly. Yeah. Because they're all fucking learnable skills. Like, unless it's like, and it's funny because when you talk about shit like this, someone's like, so what are you just going to pretend you know how to fly an airplane? Like, that's not what we're talking about. Like, no one's talking about being a fucking pilot like a military general or a doctor.
But also, you could learn.
You could definitely learn.
That's not something I want to be in a situation in where they're like, all right, like, hey, you know how to fly this plane, right? Like, absolutely. Like, leave it to me.
I will say, though, to that point, I have personally been in situations where sometimes you don't learn. And that's tough. And it's hard because, like, it sets a precedent for, like, the company going forward. You're like, yeah, I can learn this. Yeah, this will be easy. And then you're like, it's not.
And then you fail.
Exactly.
Well, he didn't specify. He said skills you don't have, but know you can learn. Not skills you don't have and hope to God you can learn.
They're not the same thing. I thought that's literally what that meant.
Yeah. Sorry, buddy.
Yeah. So some of these seem kind of like common sense. Like Shay had mentioned, like, embellishment. It's okay to embellish and be like, yeah, like, I'm confident in these areas, or like, I did this much stuff, or I earned the company this much money. Like, there's not really any way they can go back and check. So fuck it. Like, shoot for the moon. Your greatest weakness. This is my fucking least favorite question whenever I interview, and I never have any idea what to fucking say. And everyone says to say the same thing. Like, I work too hard. I hate my family. Yeah, I know.
You want to know what I said in my most recent interview?
Yes.
I got the job, obviously. I'm very good friends now. I said, I have an attitude problem.
What?
And
that's amazing.
I don't plan on fixing it. And he was like, I really appreciate your candor.
I
would
not hire you.
We became very good friends after it, and you know what? It's working really well for me.
I think you just got lucky. Like, he also had an attitude problem.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I can work with this. I speak this language.
I would not ever recommend someone follow in your footsteps, Rachel. I would like actively discourage anyone from saying something like that. But
you get to the point where you're fed up with, doing the same script over and over when you do interviews. So eventually I was just like, yeah, fuck it. I have a really bad attitude problem.
Yeah.
I always thought, like, when they ask that question, they're not really looking for, like, a legit answer. They just want to know, how do this person deal with pressure?
Yeah.
Because like that's such a pressure like question. It's like, how do
they're asking you to lie? They're encouraging you to lie when they ask that question.
I want you to know, I ask people this question when I do a lot of interviews. I interview like people at least once a week and have been for like the last several months, and I ask people their greatest weakness. You know what I'm curious to find out is I actually am expecting people to be honest. I'll tell you right now. Like,
well, what are some of the responses that you've gotten?
A lot of times it's bullshit. It's like, I try too hard, or you know, some of the answers that I think are a reasonable great weakness to, like, it's not your greatest weakness. It's what's a weakness that you can acknowledge is really the question. I think if you answer the question truthfully, what you're answering. And like for me, for instance, I say when I'm asked, I say that I overcommit, which is true. I like drop whatever I'm doing whenever something new comes and I start doing this test. So I have like a prioritization issue. And I like express that, and then, you know, like whatever. And that's like, that's a good professional work answer. Like the real thing is like, oh, I have like crippling depression, and it like yields me like horribly inoperable, like for like two days at a time. And like, I'm just not going to do anything. Like, I'm not going to say that on an interview, you know, and I wouldn't would discourage anyone else from saying it. But I do think, you know what, actually, you guys are kind of changing my mind. Maybe that's a shitty question. Maybe I should walk that one back.
It's a bad question.
Yeah, maybe you're right.
Okay.
Yeah. So some of these things I feel like are like really common sense, right? So like things that you should lie about, like how you feel about your former coworkers that I don't know, like if you fucking hated them, but like, I'm also like, I fuck around a lot at work. Like I'm the guy that like stops anyone from getting anything done. Like, I'm the reason work from home is a good thing, because I hate working. I'm like, I'd rather not do this. How you feel about your former boss, your interests, which is like, agreed, fucking, yeah. Why would anybody even, like, I don't understand being asked this question. Like, it seems so irrelevant to the job. Like, what do you like to do when you're not working? Like, what does that have to do with me working here?
These are all questions I ask.
Like, why would you ask this question?
culture, like fitting into the, you know, corporate America loves company culture and like fitting into the company culture. So I've been asked about interests before.
I mean, like,
I agree, the former boss one. Don't talk bad about your former boss. My former boss is the biggest fucking piece of shit idiot. And I would never say anything bad about him in an interview, just that, like, you know, maybe his management style and the way that I work don't mesh very well.
This is so hard for me to listen to, because, like, I guess I internalize things too much. So, like, when things aren't going well with me in a company, or like me and a supervisor, I'm like, it's me. Like, I'm the shitty one. I have to.
It's the boss. Just so you know.
Maybe.
All right, well,
no, nothing's ever wrong with me.
All right. Well, as I continued to like do this research, I did find that there was a list of things that you should always lie about on a job interview, and I thought this this made a lot of sense. And it's dark. It's actually just sad. Number one was how you're doing. Always lie about how you're doing. Like, how are you doing today? I'm fucking great. I'm unemployed. I am here, hat in hand. I am so close to sucking your cock for this job. Like, I'm so great. I'm fucking phenomenal. Number two is why you're looking for a new job. Number three is, where do you see yourself in 5 years? I don't even fucking know the answer to this question. It's like, dude, within a span of 5 years, I was like, I lived in Beirut, lived in South Korea, and then worked at a penis hospital. Like, I don't know what's going to happen next week, let alone where the fuck I'm going to be in 5 years. And then, a time you worked on a group project. I don't know why you would lie about that. And then, what the latest book that you read. I think a really threatening answer, I think a great way to get a job, I hope people do ask me this question, because I'll just say the Bible, and then when they don't hire me, I'll sue them for religious discrimination. I'll be like, they asked me my favorite book, I told them the Bible, and then I didn't get the job that I was definitely qualified for flying that airplane, okay?
Well, even if you don't get the job, you definitely, like, in the lawsuit, you'll find out all the reasons why you didn't get hired.
Because they're never going to tell you. They're never going to tell you, sorry, we're passing on you. They're just going to ghost you.
He said his greatest weakness was working, and that's when we knew he wasn't a good fit for the company.
All right, well, taking us away from the job conversation, because I am just really over this. I'm putting in my 2 weeks' notice on this conversation, and I'm storming off. So, With the Olympics already a distant memory, having finished however long ago they finished, what we remember most about them is not even the events themselves, but their doping and abuse scandals, the slimy nationalism, the political tension, and the dashed promise of international unity, with Russia's invasion of Ukraine pretty much taking place immediately after the event's conclusion. So, Rachel, Emil, keeping all this in mind, my question for you is this. Should we abolish the Olympics already?
No.
No.
Yes.
They didn't. He said Rachel and Emil. He didn't say Ian.
Well, you guys both gave the wrong answer. So
I say my reasoning for about not abolishing the Olympics, because like looking at both the Summer and the Winter Olympics, there it just highlights a bunch of activities that we don't normally see.
Like, so what?
Yeah. There's a lot of things you don't normally see.
Literally,
so
what?
Ian, get out of here. I don't
see a guy fucking making swords anymore, okay? Like, yeah, like actually, you know, blacksmiths aren't a thing anymore.
Forge and fire. It's a reality show. Look
and it
up.
Sucks.
So.
Boo. That's the guy where the guy goes, it keels or something, right? That's like, it's like whole fucking.
It keels. Yeah, that's worst catchphrase in a fucking show ever.
But does it keel? That's
not... Well, okay, wait. So, I love the Olympics, and I've discussed this with other people. My sister and I love the Olympics. I feel like when I was growing up, we never had cable or anything. So when the Olympics came on, it was like a big deal. Like it was like a really cool thing to watch on TV. And I talked to my sister about this because my coworker, now boss, fucking hates the Olympics and thinks that it's like the biggest piece of shit. And he finds it creepy that we would be competing and, you know, against each other. There's more to it, but like I'm taking a very small part of but he found it kind of creepy. And I guess to sort of see it from his perspective. But at the same time, when I was talking to my sister about it, she was like, these people do, and it's sort of what you were saying, Emil, like we see things that we don't normally see, but it's also really cool. Like some of the stuff in these sports I find to be like really, really cool and interesting. And like, damn, I didn't realize people could do these things to their bodies. Or like, yeah, like I find that really cool.
You know, there's a YouTube channel for every single thing that they do in the Olympics. You can go and watch.
Okay, you can watch. Yeah,
you
don't need
the Olympics. Like, you don't need to like destroy the environment for every city that's been there. Like destroying habitats, displacing low-income housing and, you know, like all that jazz.
This is what I find so interesting about this discussion is because like when you propose, it's like, you know, banning, getting rid of the Olympics, for like, again, as a means of like addressing all of the abuse that inevitably comes out of it, people's response is like, oh, like, what's going to happen to these sports? Like, these sports are not going away. Like, they continue to be a thing. Like, you can watch, like Usain Bolt runs all the fucking time. Like, it's not just like, he doesn't hibernate for like 4 years and then come out ready to run. Like, you could, like,
myself. Like I'm constantly up. Like I watch running and keep up with running. Like people watch like football or like the other football, and I love it. I think it's great. So like when the Olympics comes around, it's just like an addition to what I've already been keeping up with. But yeah, for most people, this is just like it's like wow, these people dedicate their whole lives to running around a lap 4 times. That's crazy.
Yeah, crazy.
Another
stupid
thing too is that. So I'm pretty sure in a lot of the sports within the Olympics, you can only be, you cannot be a professional and participate in it. And if you ever like look it up, some of these countries pay people if they win the gold, the silver, the bronze. And so for them, it's, I guess, kind of a job. But at the same time, I guess I never really thought about what Shay said about it all fucking up the environment and ruining habitats and displacing people. I guess I.
But you like it, so your individual preference is way more important. Yeah.
Yes, it is. I want to see it. The whole world wants to see it. Like,
well, so the Olympics, like, it has like a spirit, right? So like, you have to like. I feel like the idea that most supports the Olympic is like where it came from. And it's like this almost like holy, like reverent concept that like dates back to like the ancient Greek. Which back then it was like a religious ceremony, but like I think a lot of people forget that there was actually like
almost, you know, like 1500, 1600 years where there was no Olympics at all. It was like reborn in like the age of multinationalism to, you know, to the kind of the current form it is now. But like the goal. So like, what is the Olympics? Like, what is the goal of Olympism? And so according to the Olympic Charter, the goal of Olympism is to place sport at the service of the harmonious development of man, with a view to promoting a peaceful society concerned with the preservation of human dignity, which sounds really cool. Like, there's a lot of like beautiful ideas here that talks about peace. It talks about harmonious development of man, and probably most importantly, like preservation of human dignity. But like, more and more, what we're seeing is a lot of things that seem to undermine human dignity, like doping. Again, with the fact that like governments bid over having the Olympics in their respective cities. And then while they do that, they end up creating these massive infrastructures that are basically single-use infrastructures. Many cities have never found a way to repurpose them. Some find other ways. So you end up with a system that just displaces, wastes a ton of money, and then you actually there's some studies that show that property values go down after Olympics because you basically have these derelict, massive, useless areas that like you can't destroy for the sake of celebrating our past. So it's interesting. So I guess like what does the Olympics really bring? Like, what is the real point? Is it just to see like a bunch of stuff you can see on YouTube? Like,
It's a lot more than just YouTube. A lot of people, first of all, don't have the 1080p, so it's not even that great quality.
Who
for a lot of people.
Who doesn't have 1080p?
I'm just speaking for those people. I don't know. It's still so much more. And also, like, what about FIFA or the Super Bowl?
We'll do the FIFA episode next because my opinion is more or less the same. Okay. Like, it's the same. It's the same kind of idea, right? Like, it's these, you know, would have essentially become multinational corporations, like, fleecing governments to get everything that they want. And then the cost gets paid on to the taxpayer, to the fucking athletes, to like residents living in those areas. Like, I think during the Brazil Olympics,
what about
like,
inspiration? What about,
again,
Fever and just
the thing that fascinates me most about the Olympics is that we essentially think of it as like sports politics, right? And like,
that's what I was gonna say.
When we talk about abolishing the Olympics, like, it really does become this zero sum game. And like, I mean, Emil, to your credit, like a lot of people talk about, again, like, oh, well, like, what about like the magic and the mystery and like the inspiration and stuff like that. We act like the only place we get that is from the Olympics every 4 years. Like, it's not like when we abolish the Olympics, like, inspiration goes away. Like, we're not going to be like, you know, it's not going to be like 1920s, like Prohibition era. We're like, I remember when we had inspiration. We're not going to like smuggle it in flasks and like, you know, sneak onto stadiums and get like arrested by the anti-Olympic police.
Another thing too that, and I'd be interested in watching the Olympics as it's being held in another country, because as watching it in the United States, a lot of it is focused, like, obviously it's focused on the sports, but a lot of the commentary is focused around China and Russian participants or competitors. And obviously there was the thing this year with the Russian figure skater, but a few years ago, the Chinese gymnasts and how they were too young. There's always controversy and they're always talking about Russia and China. And I feel like it feeds into like a lot of the sentiments that some people and quite a lot of them in the United States feel right now about all of that stuff, which I find really weird. I feel like I'd rather just watch cool people do cool shit and then leave some of that else, but that's never that political shit is never going to go away from anything ever.
It really does function as like an unbelievable type of propaganda where it's like you can almost justify sanctions on Russia and China because their athletes cheated, like one guy like trips another guy and it's like, looks like we need a what's the, not an embargo. Yeah, like looks like we need an embargo on Chinese goods. Yeah, sanction on Chinese goods because he tripped the South Korean guy when they ice skated. Like it's really, really weird. Like the way that it's barely about the sports. And I think that's been true since the Cold War, that it's always about, like, the politics is really what makes it exciting. And like when we're watching a Russian guy and an American guy box, we're really just like, you know, like we feel like we've solved some sort of geopolitical problem when really all that's happened is like millions of dollars were spent to like make us feel better emotionally. Like it almost feels like a pacifier in a way. It's really weird.
I don't think this may be a controversial statement or something to say, but I don't think nationalism is ever going to go away. All the good and bad that comes with that, I feel like it's a very human thing. Like we're just like, that's innate. And so like, why not channel that into like, you know, some sort of organized competition, you know, instead of just,
what if we channel that into like curing cancer? Like that would be a better metric. Like it's like, we cured cancer. I know that's like a totally not a fair comparison. Like,
it's really insane.
No, but Emil is kind of correct in this, because when the Russian figure skater girl fell a bunch of times in her last performance and she did not make it onto the podium, the US commentator said, thank God, on air. They said, thank God that she fell and she did all this. She's a 15-year-old kid.
Well, so, she also like, cheated. She's 15. But like, I mean, in all fairness, it would have made it super fucking complicated if she had made it. Because
Sure. But yeah. We can't be like, thank God she fucking fucked up. And now, you know, America is better than Russia and fuck her.
First of all, like,
that's what they said.
It sounds like a classic Western Christian thing to thank God whenever something bad happens to someone else. So I'm not upset about that. I mean, that scans for me. I just don't have any issue. Like, it seems like someone fucking cheated. They kind of got their poetic justice, and like,
but listen, cool,
didn't work.
This is fucked up, because we need to address this, right? Like, this is, again, like, this is a 15-year-old kid who's being, like, bossed around by, essentially led around by handlers. Sure. She's basically a slave of, like, the Russian Sports Federation. Yeah. Shut up, Rachel. She's a 15-year-old fucking kid. Like, this wasn't this kid's idea to like, yo, let me dope and let me do as many drugs as possible so I'll be the best fucking ice skater in the world.
If it was have you seen all the drugs those kids on Euphoria do? They want to do this stuff.
This is
intentional.
It also just doesn't matter. Like, yeah, she's like, she was one person who, like, this state organization, like, basically, like, kidnapped into the Olympics. But if we are like celebrating it internationally, then that doesn't help that child or the next child or the next. As the most, as much as we can condemn that shit, then I think we are getting further in advance. But anyway, I'm moving us past this, because okay. I believe that the Olympics has outlasted its stay here. So I'm going to do a quick pop quiz. I'm gonna name a few things. I think I got 8 or 9 here. Some of them are fake Olympic events, and some of them are real. And you have to tell me if they are real or fake, okay? And I'm going to give one to each of you, so don't tell the answer if you know it. So, Emil, fake or real, Olympic canoeing.
Canoeing?
Canoeing.
I don't even know if I know what canoeing is.
A canoe? What are you talking about? You don't know
Rachel,
canoeing.
Let him do it.
Canoeing is a... You're in some kind of water floating device, but I don't know if that's like your feet are inside the boat. Or
all right,
your feet
I don't want to know if you know what canoeing is. Do you think it is part of the Olympics? Yes or no?
I'm going to say no.
Okay, well, you're wrong. It's in it. Okay. Ian, dressage. Dressage. Is dressage...
Okay. Dressage.
Dressage.
I don't understand not knowing what canoeing is, but what the fuck is dressage?
I know what it is.
What is it?
That's why I didn't pick you, Rachel.
Okay. Do I think dressage is an Olympic sport? With a name like that, how could it not be in the Olympics?
How could it not be? Well, you're right. Dressage is. I don't think I want to pick you at all, Rachel, because I think you'll know all these, but just to, I'll softball you in one. Trampoline. Is there Olympic trampoline?
Yes, there is, and I've watched it. And
yeah, it's lame.
Dressage is with horses. That's why I know, because I grew up on a farm.
So are the horses allowed to do drugs? Like, if you can't.
Horse doping is a real problem. Emil, all right. Laser sailing. Is laser sailing a real Olympic event?
Laser sailing?
Laser sailing. Is this a real Olympic event?
Summer or winter?
I assume summer.
All right, then I'm going to say no. If it's winter, yes.
Wrong. It's a real Olympic event. Ian, what? Hammer throwing. Throwing hammers. Is that a real Olympic event or not?
Fuck yeah. Hammer throwing's my fave, dude.
Yes. All right. And that's the last one.
Are you serious?
Here. Yes, it's a real thing. All of these are real things. They are so fucking weird.
Like, what?
Everything is Olympics now. There's Olympic skateboarding, as we know. There's anything you can think of is Olympics. Do we care enough to do everything else we're doing to basically enrich the IOC? I don't even know if I don't hate the IOC or whatever, or the Olympic commissioner or whatever their name is, but I don't hate them. But anyway, everything is the Olympics. Do we care? I don't care. So
you're right. With that argument, I honestly, all the 8 things that I have no idea what they are. No, Olympics can go away. I'm fine.
All right. And then just a couple positive notes. So there are some proposed solutions to saving the Olympics. One of those that I think makes the most sense to me is, instead of having temporary places, using permanent cities, like cities that are organized by the world. It's like, this is where we do this. They have sustained infrastructure. It'll sustain only one place. I mean, I imagine this will be a first world country or something like that. Obviously, with the
problematic
lobbying power they have. Absolutely. And, it's going to be enriching the rich at the expense of others, perhaps. But on the other hand, it's sustainable. You know what I mean? So it's something that we can do. People can train. They can build up an industry in one area that will be, that they know will be sustained. So that is one possible solution, just to throw that out there. That's it.
There's one. Okay.
That's it.
Well, I had one before we move on, and mine was that no more athletes at all. What you do is you just select citizens. It's like jury duty. You select citizens at random from every country, and then you just show up and you compete.
I love this.
And you have to do it, and you have to go. And it's just like,
I really like that one. Yeah. I want that one.
That would be fucking, I would love that. Like, hey, Ian, are you doing anything this summer? Like, yeah, I got drawn to do shot put. I got selected to do shot put at the Olympics this year, guys. So, root for me, USA.
Doing dressage for this summer.
Dressage, yeah.
Yeah, I've got to learn how to ride a horse.
You really should actually Google dressage, just so you guys know, because it's almost like prancing ponies, and I'm pretty sure.
Oh, I've seen it. It's like the fancy ponies. It's like, it's basically like how much can you master this beast is basically the whole idea of dressage.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is like a little bit of a departure, and we don't have time to talk about it now, but I'm interested to see what the Olympics will turn into as more and more people step away from TV culture. Glued to a TV to watch a thing for a certain time. What does the Olympics turn into 15, 20 years when everything is, media is on our phones or just like...
It's the Metaverse Olympics is the next thing that'll happen. That'll solve all
Bullshit.
Of our issues. We're all competing in 3D virtual world. No one's leaving their house, and it's all sponsored by Meta.
Yeah, well, and then on that note, really quick before we move on, I mean, this Olympics was the lowest rated ever. I think it might not even be an issue. It might just lose its own steam over time. Anyway, moving on from the Olympics. All right. We all know that IRL flirting took a real hit after the proliferation of dating apps, the Me Too movement, and the COVID-19 pandemic. But the brave incels of Reddit are proclaiming that we should not be afraid to flirt in real life, and that where the public sphere is concerned, it's open season for shooting your shot. So, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, as Omicron winds down and as the summer masklessness season will soon be upon us, we need to know, is it okay to hit on people in public, or is IRL flirting dead?
Yeah, I'd say IRL flirting's dead. I'm sorry.
Those are two different things, though. Is it okay and is it dead?
You're right. Fuck me. Answer both.
I'm more curious to know if it's okay.
Yeah,
I don't think it's okay, but I don't think it's dead. But I don't think it's okay anymore.
Why? Why? Why don't you think it's okay? I'd like to know.
I feel like there are too many, for lack of a better phrase, bad apples that just ruin the experience for everyone. You know, like you can, you have like some people that they'll set the precedent, and it's nice, but there's the chance of one person just being like, hey, I think your feet look good in those sandals. This ruins it for everyone.
Yeah, but this is such a, what you're saying is such a weird concept, because do you know what happens on dating apps?
As a guy,
the likelihood of somebody saying your feet look really good happens way more often on dating apps than it does in real life.
Interesting.
I would almost like take that as a point to Emil's credit. It's like it already happens so much in the virtual world that like, if you're going to risk bringing that negative energy to the real life space where like the woman or whoever might actually feel threatened, like I feel like that actually goes to Emil's point. Like it's there's so much of this kind of fear and talking and like it puts a bad taste in everyone's mouth. I would never, honestly, I'm in a 2-year long relationship at this point. I would never hit on someone in public, and I hadn't been when I was single, because I feel like I'm gonna like end up on someone's Instagram story and be like, this guy asked me for my fucking number. Like, I know, right? That's maybe that's in bad, you know, maybe that's in bad faith or whatever, but like it's actually like kind of freaky. Like, you know, it's like scary to just be like, to be thrown in with like the actual douchebags, you know, if your intentions are not even your intentions, but your, maybe your execution. Like, yeah, because that's really, I guess, like we're all like looking, fuck, I'm walking myself into a corner.
Shay, I think like, so you're saying hitting on somebody in public. So we all understand like the concept of like, he's hitting on me. What about just like starting a conversation with somebody? Like, let's say you're out and you're, you know, obviously I know Ian's married and you're in a relationship. I don't know your situation, Emil, but like if you guys didn't have those things, when you're out and you know, you with your friends and you see like a person you might be attracted to, is there anything wrong with just going up and speaking to them versus like, when I think of hitting on it as being a female, it's like, hey, did you fall from the fucking sky or some bullshit like that? Right. Versus, hey, my name is, you know, whatever, whatever, you know, like, I don't know. Being a girl, using online dating before, I think it's kind of sad actually that you guys are saying absolutely fucking not, don't talk to women or whoever you may be attracted to in public. Like for me, that feels like kind of sad. Like,
all right.
That sucks.
I've got a couple different thoughts on this. All right. On like the one hand, kind of to like Shay and Emil's credit or their point, I think that what's happened is like the proliferation of dating apps has like created a space specifically for that. So it's like essentially you can use whatever venue you're in is like the purpose of the venue that it's for, right? Like it's created this like kind of new social norm where it's almost out of the ordinary to, you know, approach someone in a public place and be like, you know, hey, what's up? Just shooting my shot. Because it's like, now we have this whole other process. And it's like, what are you doing? Like, I'm not here for that. Like, I'm here for this.
Exactly.
Like, I'm here for this concert. I'm here to buy fucking groceries. Like, bro, like, I'm trying to pick out my cereal for the week. Get the fuck out of here. So it's like weird that it has become this like new norm, but like, on the one, so that's where I get it. But on the other hand, like, it concerns me because it's just like yet another example of like this, the way that like the tech space or like tech bros or whatever have like further removed us from community, where it's like, if you do want to engage in like very like standard acts of human interaction, like you have to utilize or go through this virtual space. So like to Shay and Emil's point, like I do get that. And I think about like a woman who, and you know, like for guys, it's just like, all right, I'm just going to put myself out there and do that. But like you put that mentality in like, you know, all of the men on the planet to like an attractive woman where like every single place that she goes is now like managed by her having to politely decline numerous advances from men just for like when she's trying to like live her fucking life versus, again, like this like complete evisceration of community where it's like, okay, if I want to engage in this like human action, I've got to use this like tech platform where like, you know, they have set like the standards of engagement have been set by like terms and conditions, which is like also really restrictive and weird. So it's like, I kind of feel like we've put ourselves in like this really weird fucking bind slash construct? Damn, I talked for a while. You guys, take it away.
I understand what you're saying. I really do. But I, like, as much as, like, I really, like, want to... So I also think it's a societal construct nowadays that women never want to be approached and talked to because they're just living their lives and they want all the fucking freaks to go away and leave them alone. They're doing their own thing. Like, that also seems like a generalization because of everything that has that's been happening recently. Certainly I have walked down the street and been spoken to or talked to at times that I felt were a little bit scary or inappropriate, but there's also been times that people have spoken to me, men particularly, that when I've been out, that I like found kind of nice and flattering and we had a great conversation. And, you know, so I don't know. I think it's kind of sad that it's led to like what you're saying, like, the sense of community or real human interaction, because there's always like danger, like something is going to happen to me, which being a woman and living alone for quite a long time and still doing that and living in Chicago for 9 years. And, I always had that sense up of like,
what does Chicago have to do with, what are you saying?
I'm just saying, like, when I walk around or I'm alone, you know, and like people, there's less people around there. So like the, you know, the interaction's more likely where there's a lot of more humans around versus where I live now. And so, I don't just the whole thing feels like quite sad to me that like,
well, I think you're right. It is like, I mean, there is like a discongruity here, an incongruity, and it's like, it's weird. But I also think that like in an effort of self-preservation, like any self-aware person, I think would avoid being the antagonizer of someone's discomfort in a social circumstance. Like, I would much rather, I mean, it's like an unfortunate death, but like from my standing, like I would much rather let that aspect of humanity die, to put it bluntly, than potentially be some like the maker of someone's horrible day. Or even okay, in a more self-preservational aspect, like be like, fuck you, man. I'm just trying to get my nails done. I'm just it's like, aren't you supposed to be my gynecologist? Why are you talking to me like you know, if I get you know, whatever the circumstances, like
I don't know, Shay. You're sort of like trying to flush down the toilet, like
I get it. I'm just saying, like, from a self.
Like, no, you weren't with your partner anymore. This goes back to what Ian was saying. If you feel this way and you weren't with your girlfriend anymore, how the fuck are you going to meet somebody new without going along with the tech bros?
You do the tech bro thing. Yeah, you do the apps. I did the apps.
If you take a look at like where this has gone, like we're looking at it from the vacuum of like, you know, 10, 20 years ago, how things were, you know, meeting somebody at a bar or at a concert or something like that. And like, that all seems very romantic to us. But you just take a look at it where it's gone from, like, say the past 200 or 300 years, where like women would drop their handkerchiefs, you know, to court men, or like, some other example, like it's, you know, it's changed. It's evolved over time. Maybe we're just in this space now where, you know, for that particular type of thing, the online sphere is where it's at.
I don't know. Wait a minute. Here's another thing. So it's not acceptable, obviously, to say something crude and inappropriate in public, but it fucking happens constantly in online dating. I cannot tell you how many pictures of penises I've seen, how many times I've been asked to have sex with. Do you know how many times I've been asked to fuck somebody in public? Zero times did a guy come up to me and immediately say, hey, you're really pretty, I want to fuck you. You know how many times it happened on dating sites?
That's actually a fascinating point, because, you know,
on one thing, and that's what we're going to go with, that we're going to go with that one versus,
I don't think we're saying that's okay,
that it never happens to me in public. We're picking that one.
We're not advocating for people to send dick pics.
Of course, that's the one you're picking. You're picking that platform versus...
All right, well, let me ask you this. Would you prefer people to show you their dicks in real life?
But they wouldn't. That's the thing. It's never happened to me in my 33 years of living. No one has ever whipped out their dick and shown it to me. Do you know how many I've seen in the digital space? Probably fucking 50.
Sure.
Wow.
Just out of curiosity, what platform are they sending? Is it like, is that Bumble or, because Tinder, you can't send pics. I'm
you're right. So like where you first meet and chat with someone on that, and then on Bumble, you can send pictures.
Oh.
So
you can also block and report people.
Yeah, of course. There's all those things you can do, but I'm saying like the shooting your shot in person to me as a woman seems very different based on experience than shooting your shot on a dating app, where that usually is, you're really pretty, I want to fuck you, here's my dick, versus you're really pretty, can I have your phone number? Do you want me to buy you a drink?
Can I have your phone number to send you a dick pic?
Like, can I have your phone number? I'm going to go to the bathroom real quick.
That's never happened, though. I've never given somebody my phone number and then in public first when meeting face to face, and then they've sent me a dick pic.
And this is what I'm talking about when I talk about like the impact it has on community, because I think when you do meet people in real life, like their personhood is firmly established. Like you've met them as a human being, as opposed to like when you meet somebody through an application, it's just like they're essentially like a phantasm or like
the avatar.
It's essentially just like a facsimile. Thank you. That's what I was looking for. Of your desires, right? Like it's just like this receptacle that you can kind of like imagine, because they've presented this like idealistic version from themselves. So you're already starting on this premise that like this person is like somehow less real, maybe because of the presentation of themselves as being manicured. So like I'm sure that has something to do with like the reasoning that makes it easier, as Rachel had mentioned, to like send dicks. I don't know. It feels like we've exhausted this topic. So I know that Shay has one more for us. Go ahead, take us away.
Well, I do love that. But anyway, all right. So in the remaining few minutes we have, maybe my favorite story of the day. So discontent with just having a monopoly on the American imagination by owning every last piece of intellectual property, Disney has also decided to own the country's physical property as well. As they recently announced online, Disney is proud to introduce Story Living, a picturesque Disney city built in the middle of the California desert in an attempt to manage not just the vacation experience, but the living one as well. And so with that in mind, my question for you is, are the people who choose to live in the Disney storytelling community oblivious to the state of the world, or have they just decided to give in and take the Mickey pill?
They're completely oblivious and stupid.
No. You need no.
fight.
First of all, there's already a Disney town. It's called Celebration, and it's existed for a really long time. And it's right outside of Orlando, and it's been there since I was a kid. And you know that already.
I forgot about that. Yeah,
the one I read into, the one that you're talking about now, and it's a retirement community. It's a 55. Well, part of it, at
some
least,
of it is,
if
yeah.
you look at their website, they're really billing it as a 55 plus. And those people are fucking delusional anyways, and already outside of like the reality of things. My grandma lives in an old people town here, and they have no concept of what is going on. So that is more of like a question of, are old people fucking ridiculous and living in their own bubble, or is Disney, or does this have anything to do with Disney?
I was gonna say, Richard, I mean, you gotta admit, like, you know that there are people reading about this, like, in art, like our age, like there are fucking people with like Mickey Mouse tattoos, like the mouse outline,
right,
that can't wait to fucking until they open one of these goddamn communities next door, and they'll be like first in line, like they're buying a goddamn iPhone.
Right.
I mean, that's fair. Fair.
But like, how much is too much, Disney? And I say that sarcastically, because it is too much.
This is like, I think this might be where my fucking line is. Like actually building like an entire Disney town. Like this is the plot of Westworld. Like, what is this
any different from like, okay, so because the Disney name is like fucking stamped on this, they're selling sort of like this dream, this facade, this whatever it may be, that already exists when they build luxury apartments right next to really poor areas that have big signs on the outside of all these great amenities that happen inside, and your life is amazing because you buy them.
Because like that doesn't have the peripheral past of like my childhood and you know, the cartoons and the stories. Like, that's just, you
know. In those circumstances, to Emil's point, like, not only, like, is it a community that detaches itself and controls everything, in this case, it's literally an international media conglomerate that not only will now be the owners of your literal living space, but also the food you eat, the news that you absorb, all of your media, like all of your TV, all of your radio, like literally everything. Like, they will be a soup to nuts life management company. Like, that aspect of it feels a little bit more dystopian than I think, you know, a traditional.
I feel like now that you're explaining it like that, it sounds a little bit like North Korea.
Doesn't it though?
The food. This just in.
Minnie Mouse has another grandchild. Like, yeah, it's too much.
So they even say it in their own words. They say, so the intention of this: as we prepare to enter our second century, we are developing new and exciting ways to bring the magic of Disney to people wherever they are, expanding storytelling to story living. We can't wait to welcome residents to these beautiful and unique Disney communities where they can live their lives to the fullest. So the idea here, and they say it right, like storytelling, if you use that as a metaphor for like news and media, they're literally changing that to story living. So they will be the owners of your life. I mean, straight up, like they will not only control the narrative, they will control the literal home that you live in.
Actually, I take all this back. This is great because they can put all the Disney crazy people in one space.
I do like that idea.
And then that's it. That's it. I think that's yeah. No, good
job. You know what though? When you boil this all down, like these companies, like being a person who like works in like market research and all this kind of thing, when you boil this down, these big companies have large teams that investigate and research all of this stuff before they decide to put millions in it. And the fact that this is a sellable idea to me seems really sad. Like to want to fully escape your life and be waited on by the characters or the cast members that Disney has, and to, you know, having them create your whole narrative and your whole life. This is something that they've already done tons and tons of research on that people actually really want, or else they wouldn't have done it. And that to me seems really sad, because that just is another indication that our life and our society and our world is not good, and they want to escape into fairyland.
They should just do drugs. Just do drugs. That's so much.
Great solution, Emil. I think so. Here's the thing that like freaks me out the most. Like, I think this is the zenith of what happens when like corporations are like unchecked by you know, like government power, and by government power I mean like representative democracy, right? Like when companies are just allowed to like amass, you know, like vast reaches of fucking influence, you've created this like very effective cradle to grave like consumer loyalty program, where it's like your childhood memories are essentially fucking formed by Disney, and you have like these sort of like, you know, Kleinian like object relationship with these things, where like you associate good feelings with this fucking company that like teaches you the difference between right and wrong, and like guides you through your life to the extent that, like, I don't know, they're probably going to have fucking like Disney universities and like, you know, Disney
you can church. Fucking,
then you, yeah,
they
Disney
actually church. Already have Disney school curriculum. That's already a thing.
Fuck my life. Well, but like, and this is the thing that freaks me out most, is like when I read about this program too, is like they pitch it as like, oh, like you'll be able to, you know, like enjoy dinner at the Disney themed restaurant, and then you'll be able to go to an art show featuring galleries by Disney sanctioned artists. So it's like literally like everything that enters this town will had to have gone through like the fucking Disney checklist. So it's just like, you know, just like in a fucking Disney movie, you can't see any characters smoking. Like your entire life is going to be manicured to the extent that, like Emil joked about, like the news is going to be like what fucking Huey, Dewey, and Louie Duck did that day. Like you're not going to know anything that's going on in the outside world. Like you're just going to be surrendering your free will to this fucking corporation for the extent of like, I mean, like this is
we're
like
very much talking about North Korea. Sorry, it's the whole thing.
But that's the question, though. That's the question at the top. Like, are these people oblivious, or is this like a conscious effort? Like, are they being mass controlled, or are they like, fuck it, dude. The climate apocalypse is here. I'm going to go live on a man-made lake in the fucking desert, all like brought to you by Disney. Like, is it intentional?
I don't know, but it's really sad.
That's a hard question. That's a hard question.
Dude,
I want to say yes.
Ha.
See, I want to say yes.
My thought here is that this is like a group of people who have childhood arrested development, who had some kind of traumatic experience as children associated with Disney. And this is like effectively like a group therapy facility where all the people who are fucked up as kids can go share their trauma together.
Yeah, but you also have to remember, these people have to be hitting a certain socioeconomic status
to be
living within the Disney community. So while you're talking about that aspect of it, like, it is also created for a, like, a certain demographic of people. So not only is it fully Disney, but you can imagine it also might be fully filled with a very certain demographic.
Yeah, rich people.
So it's even more... It's even more like sort of like a vacuum.
The thing I love about it is about this fucking town. It's like, it's essentially a town that's going to be run by Disney in the middle of the desert. So I love the idea that there's some sort of like Disney infrastructure hack, and like the people in this desert community, like, don't receive supplies, and like their cars are all like Disney cars, and they're fucking like remote controlled by like within the Disney community, and they don't work like when you get a certain radius outside of the desert city. So you're just like all these people like crawling through the desert, like trying to get rations as like the climate apocalypse bears upon us.
I don't know if I understand, like, maybe because this is, I'm not a part of that Disney culture, but like, what is it about Disney that makes you want to be in that world? Like, I don't.
Shared
trauma. I
don't
get that.
Escapism. Escapism from, you know, from whatever it may be. Like Shay said, trauma. It could be like, it's all about escapism. I think about like when we were actually kids and like the Disney movies that were coming out when we were kids, a lot of the storylines centered around escaping anyways, escapism, becoming something different, trauma that the characters had, you know, lots of times parents die, kids go through, you know, it's like, it's all about escapism, which is what moving to the middle of the desert. Who wants to fucking live in the middle of the desert? I mean, there you go. It just, it's following the thread of like escaping reality and living in some sort of fantasy vacuum of happiness and, you know.
I think, and honestly, I think to kind of piggyback on Rachel's point too, I think that like in an Aristotelian sense, there's like a real sense of catharsis in the Disney universe. Like the Disney universe is a universe in which justice exists. Like,
right.
you never watch any of these, be like, you know, the bad guy always gets his comeuppance at the end of the movie. And like, that's a very like emotionally, that's a very emotionally satisfying feeling, especially when you live in a country where like the bad guys routinely, you know, get away with everything. So
yeah.
It's like, it makes sense that like you would want, I don't know, like your real life to be reflective of that fucking, you know, cartoon ideology.
The irony here is just that the bad guys here are the ones brainwashing those very same people into a fucking desert community where they will be their fucking lords. That's the fucking truth.
As a black guy
watching Tarzan, I did not identify with that. That was not a comeuppance for me. That just wasn't, it's like, how did you feel
about the Princess Frog one, which was one of the first ones that they came out with, where the girl Tiana like lived in like Louisiana, and it was all black characters. Most of them were black characters. Like, how did you feel about that? Did you feel like you related to that? Because they were trying hard with that one.
I don't know if I saw all of that one. I'm gonna be completely honest with you. So I think I know the story. It's like the voodoo guy.
The princess and the frog, basic idea of like kiss the frog and become the prince or whatever. That's like the basic idea of it. But it's based in the like the bayou. Whatever.
Guys, I'm going to be honest with you. I'm bored. I'm ending the show. Thanks so much for being here. We had a great time, everyone. Go home. Drive safe.